Now, as you already know, we're concerned in this series of lectures with the higher evolution of man. And higher, of course, suggests, indeed presupposes, lower. If there's a higher evolution, there must, of course, be or have been a lower evolution. So the question arises, how are we to distinguish between the two? What is the difference between lower evolution and higher evolution? How are we to know this? Now, we may say that any evolving phenomenon whatsoever, whether it's an egg or whether it's an empire, can be studied in two ways. It can be studied in terms of its past, and it can also be studied in terms of its future. It can be studied in terms of its origins, what it's grown out of. It can be studied in terms of its destination, its goal, what it is heading for. In other words, in more technical philosophical language, it can be studied either genetically or teleologically. Now, suppose we take this phenomenon of man. Suppose we take, that is to say, ourselves. Man, as we've already seen, is part and parcel of the evolutionary process. Man is developing. Now, suppose we take man, so as we take ourselves at the best that we generally know him. Sometimes we know man, unfortunately, whether in ourselves or other people, not at all at his best, very far from his best. But this evening, let's let him off, as it were, rather lightly, and take him at the best that we normally know him. Take, let us say, man as a self-conscious, that is to say, a self-conscious, an aware human being, intelligent, sensitive, balanced, harmoniously developed, responsible, and so on. Let us take man in this sense, or a man, if you like, of this kind. Man at the best that we normally or usually know him. Now, if we take man in this way, if we take the phenomenon man in this way, at the best that we know him, then we find that we can look at him in two ways. We find we can try to understand him in two ways. We can try to understand man, try to understand ourselves, one, in terms of what he has developed out of, and two, in terms of what he will develop into, in fact, is already developing into. Now, it's the first of these which constitutes the lower evolution. What man has developed out of, that constitutes the lower evolution. And the second constitutes the higher evolution. What man can develop into, what we can develop into. The lower evolution is dealt with by science, especially by the biological sciences, whereas the higher evolution, we may say, is covered by more advanced psychology, covered by the arts, and covered by religion in the more spiritual sense of the term. Covered also by what Middleton Murray, for instance, calls the metabiological sciences, those sciences which go beyond the ordinary biological framework. Now, this may sound, to some of you at least, a little complicated, not very clear. So let us start thinking diagrammatically. I was going to ask you to close your eyes and imagine a right angle triangle. But this might be difficult for some people. Some people find it rather difficult to visualize. So I decided that instead of doing this, I'd get someone to draw a simple chart or diagram on the blackboard. So let's just take a look at this. And this, I hope, will make clear to some extent at least the nature of the difference between the lower evolution on the one hand and the higher evolution on the other. Now if we look at this triangle, we shall see that along the hypotenuse of the triangle there are various numbers and figures. First of all, there's point 2, right in the middle. Now, point 2 represents our aware human being. That is to say, man at the best that we know him. He stands here. So this whole section of the hypotenuse, from this point here, right up to 2, this represents the process of the lower evolution. This is the distance that man has come, and this is where he stands now. And this section of the hypotenuse represents the higher evolution. This is the distance that man, that we ourselves, have yet to traverse. So lower evolution here, higher evolution up there. Now we see that each of these two sections, the section representing the lower evolution and the section representing the higher evolution, can be in turn divided. So there's point one here. Point one represents the point at which consciousness emerges. The point, that is to say, at which the animal becomes human. Animals, of course, do possess a sort of rudimentary consciousness, especially some of the higher animals, but one is thinking here of consciousness in its distinctively human form. So human consciousness emerges here. Now, point 3 in the middle of the line or section representing the higher evolution, point 3 is the point at which transcendental awareness or awareness of absolute reality emerges in a decisive manner. In other words, when it starts to be a permanent faculty of the being, or when it starts to be a directive principle of one's life. And this point is sometimes called the point of no return, because it's the point beyond which retrogression for the individual becomes impossible. So we have now 3 points, 1, 2, and 3, dividing this hypotenuse of our triangle into 4 sections. And then plus the point here, 0, and the point up there, infinity, we have along the hypotenuse 5 distinct points. 0, 1, 2, 3, and infinity. 5 altogether. So 0 obviously represents the starting point of the whole evolutionary process. If one thinks in terms of physics, this is the subatomic unit. Or if one thinks in terms of biology, if one starts with biology, then this point represents the amoeba. Point one, of course, as I've explained, is the point at which consciousness, that is to say, human consciousness, emerges. Point two is the point at which self-consciousness or awareness emerges. And we may say that most of us, the majority of us, are still a bit below this point. This is the human being as we know him at his best at present. But most of us fall considerably below that point, we may say. In fact, in the case of some people, one might even say they're not really very much above this. In fact, sometimes you feel they're hardly there at all. They're just sort of... One can't help feeling that sometimes, that quite a number of people are not, in fact, very much more than animals. I was reading not so very long ago an article in which it was stated that someone had recently claimed, in a very positive manner, I think he'd done some scientific investigation, that all human beings facially definitely resembled either pigs or birds. And according to this person, it's possible to look around at one's friends and immediately classify them as either pigs or birds as regards their facial appearance. And this is indeed quite a thought, that we do have still, whether facially or otherwise, so very much of the animal nature still clinging about us. For the majority of people, we may go so far as to say humanity is something yet to be achieved. We usually take it for granted that we are human. We refer to the human race as though every statistical individual was a fully fledged human being. But this is not really so much to be taken for granted as one might have thought. The vast majority are still living very much at the animal level, preoccupied with purely animal needs and interests. And comparatively few succeed in rising to any extent above that. And so it's all very well for people to talk of, say, leading a religious life or leading a spiritual life as though you could go straight off and do that. For the vast majority of people, the first preoccupation is that they should make quite sure that they're leading a truly human life. And then after that, you can think in terms of a life which is higher than the human. So for most people, this is the immediate duty, one may say, to achieve humanity, to become human. And we have to ask ourselves this also. We have to apply it to ourselves. Are we yet really and truly and fully human? What to speak of anything more than human? Have we yet reached really the human level? Have we really established ourselves on the human level? Do we all the time function on the human level? Do we really behave like human beings? Or are we not only too often just animals whose marvellous brains have placed at their disposal just a little bit of technology and not very much more than that? So this is something about which we should think and ponder indeed, very seriously indeed. Because as I said, very few of us come up to here, most or many are down here and some not much above here. So that's point one and point two, and then of course point three, the point at which, as I said, transcendental awareness emerges, awareness of reality, which begins to carry us above the human. And this point, infinity, is of course the point of what in Buddhism we call nirvana, or full enlightenment, or Buddhahood, the state of a fully perfected and enlightened human being. Now, these five points divide the hypotenuse, representing the evolutionary process, into four distinct sections, or four distinct stages. We've got stage A, which is, we may say, the infrahuman, the subhuman. That would say the mineral, the vegetable, and the animal kingdoms. And then B, which is the human, both primitive and civilized. And then C, which we may describe as the ultra-human, and D, which is the suprahuman, or even the transhuman. So in this way, with the help of this diagram, with the help of this chart, we can cover the whole process of evolution. The whole process that begins with the amoeba, continues through man, unenlightened man, and culminates in the Buddha, or the enlightened man, the man who has fully awoken to absolute reality and identified himself with it. So in this way we see that with the help of this conception of evolution, in this extended sense, science and religion the lower and the higher evolution, biology and metabiology are combined, are embraced in a single vast sweep which comprehends the whole of life in all its manifestations at every possible, at every conceivable level. And this is surely a most inspiring and in a way even consoling prospect, because it enables us to understand ourselves by understanding man, by understanding life, by understanding evolution better than ever before. It makes, we may say, sense of human existence. We can begin to see just where we stand. We can see that man occupies the middle point in the whole evolutionary process. He has come up so far, and he has so much farther still to go. But far as he yet has to go, far as we have yet to go, we can nonetheless advance joyfully, because the path is clear beneath and before our feet. Now, just one final point before we pass on to the third and the last section of this evening's lecture. As indicated or illustrated by this diagram, the lower and the higher evolution are, in a sense, continuous. One, we may say, grows out of the other, follows upon the other, springs from the other. The higher, of course, from the lower. But at the same time, there are very important, very radical differences between the two, between the lower evolution on the one hand and the higher evolution on the other. And the biggest difference is this, that the lower evolution proceeds, as it were, collectively, whereas the higher evolution is an individual matter. In the case of the higher evolution, it's one organism at a time, one organism separate, by itself, if you like, even alone. And this is why the development of self-consciousness, the development of awareness, the development of mindfulness, upon which, as most of you know, Buddhism places so very much emphasis, is so supremely important. It is this mindfulness or this awareness, this consciousness, if you like, of one's own being, of oneself as an individual in the true sense, which constitutes the growing point of the higher evolution. Amongst vegetables, amongst animals of the same species, we find that members of the same species cannot outstrip one another in the evolutionary process. One individual may be bigger, may be stronger, but not essentially different from any other individual member of the same species. There's no difference of kind. But one man, on the other hand, can outstrip other men, can outstrip all other men, can become different in kind from all other men, can become what is sometimes called a new man, can become what in Buddhism is called a Buddha, an enlightened or an awakened one, which means not just the old man, the original man, reissued, if you like, in a slightly improved edition, but an altogether new species of man, if you like, an altogether new species of being. One can even speak in terms of a fresh biological or even metabiological mutation. So what we call religion, what we call spiritual life, is or should be concerned with the production of this new man. Unfortunately, it isn't always so, isn't often so. Only too often religions are concerned with other things. Maybe enlisting converts, or putting up great buildings, or proving something, or demonstrating something. But what they should all really be concerned with is producing this new man. What Buddhism calls this enlightened being, this Buddha. And this is what any true religious or true spiritual movement should be concerned with, contributing to this process of the higher evolution, not wasting time and wasting energy on unessentials.